Hello, Guitar Smarts listeners. This is an important announcement. Please don't skip ahead. We start this podcast with a special message. Way back in 2021, Guitar Smarts had the pleasure of interviewing the utterly fantastic Matt Long. Matt is a multiple award-winning British blues guitarist and lead singer of the British blues band Catfish and hard rock outfit The Revenant Ones. He joined us for episode number 20 and was a truly gracious guest who spoke about his career, his childhood, guitars, and meeting his hero, Joe Bonamassa. Well, Matt needs your help. Through 2023, Matt has been undergoing treatment for bowel cancer, and his recent prognosis has meant that to extend his life and retain a chance of survival, he needs to seek private treatment outside of the NHS. Matt's family have set up a GoFundMe page that is linked in the Guitar Smarts link tree in the description of this podcast, and we at the Guitar Smarts podcast would like to invite each and every listener to consider donating towards this fund that could well save the life of one of the brightest guitar talents of our generation. Now is the time, folks. Head on over to the link in the description to find the GoFundMe page. Donate what you can. Your donation could save a life. Thank you. Enjoy the podcast.
The guitar changes so much depending on kind of ambient temperatures and how much it's been played and gigged and taken in and out of cases and loaded into the back of the car and all of these things. And more often than not, it's the truss rod that needs a little tweak, plus or minus, just to dial it back in to where you like it. Mm-hmm. But people don't do that. And that's why I end up inundated with guitars coming through my door with people going, the action just isn't right on this. And it's just like, well, the neck relief is just way off for a start. And then there's other things we can do.
Greetings, welcome back to the Guitar Smarts podcast. Remember, if you're an everyday gigging guitarist, this is the podcast for you and maybe your friends too, so please tell them about us. It's great to be back doing the podcast this week. Kieran and I have a good catch-up following recent gigs that we had. If you remember from the last episode, Kieran brought us up to date on some new pedals he was gifted at Christmas. He's now built his new pedal board and he gives us a really good report on how he's developed his latest rig. I also have some rig news following my first gig of the year. You all know that I prefer to use a modelling-based setup with a Helix rather than a traditional guitar amp, but that may change ever so slightly. Listen in to find out. Finally, the main meat of the show today is part one of a deep dive into guitar action setup. Probably the most important aspect of guitar setup to get right is the action, the distance between the strings and the frets. Further away generally makes for poor playability unless you play slide or depending on your preference. This week, Kieran walks us through how to get to know your truss rod and what adjustments and measurements you should make and take to improve your action. Housekeeping. Remember to like and subscribe to this podcast on your preferred podcast app. This way you won't miss the next show. Use the link tree in the description of this show as well to get to our Buy Me a Coffee page, links to some of our Spotify playlists, social media pages, especially the Guitar Geek Hangout page on Facebook, where you can interact with Kieran, myself, and many other guitar nerds just like us. If you really want to support us, use the links in the link tree to leave us a rating or a review. This is the best way to support us and help us to grow. And more importantly, it costs you nothing but a little bit of time. Anyway, have a great couple of weeks. Remember, if you have any comments or requests for the show, you can reach out to us through our social media pages. That's about enough from me. Let's get to it. Kieran, my old mate, it's been a while. We haven't recorded for a few weeks, have we?
I know. We've been doing work and all that kind of other stuff that takes us away from this.
Yeah. Travelling about, all kinds of things.
Travelling about, yeah.
Yeah, it's good though. It's good to see you, mate. You keeping well?
Yeah, I'm keeping really well, thank you. Been a busy few weeks. It feels like everybody played their guitars over Christmas and then realised that they needed them set up. So my phone has literally been going crazy with people going, can you set my guitar up? Can you set my guitar up? And so that's been good. I've had half a dozen guitars through the door this week. Just,
wow.
Yeah, churning them out. So that's been good fun. And then had the first gig of the year with my band last weekend, which was really good fun. Felt good to blow the cobwebs off, and it was a good gig.
Yeah.
And my tone was just as I wanted it. I was trying out some new pedals as well, and yeah, it just felt good. It was good. Yeah, it was a good gig. Really enjoyed
it. Fantastic, dude. Yeah.
How about you?
Excuse me. Yeah. Similar to you, actually. Yeah, first gig of the year this weekend, just gone. First gig for a while as well. So it really felt great to kind of get out and play loud and blow the cobwebs off. It was good fun as well, because it wasn't like a formal gig or a pub gig or anything like that. It was a group of friends who we play together fairly regularly a few times through the year. And we kind of go out as a band called Porn Star Martini. But it's really just like, you know, like college friends, you know, from back in the day. And we just get together and just play generally for the odd gig here and there. And it was the drummer's sister's 40th birthday party that we played for. And it was a pretty nice party, but like fairly, you know, laid back. So it was good fun, you know, just really relaxed and stuff. So it was really nice to get out and play. But I did have a rig realization whilst I was there, which we'll come to later on. But it's to do with the FRFR thing with modeling. It's to do with the speaker setup. But I was inevitable. Actually, I think it was. I'll speak about it later. But yeah, that gig was great. The beginning to the new year has been fantastic. But it's just been so busy work wise. And I'm already looking forward to having a break. Got like a week away planned in April. I can't wait for it already. It's just it's just been such a hectic start to the year. But saying that, I kind of want the winter to come and go. Not that we should kind of, you know, while away the time and try and get it to pass too quickly, you know, but at the same time, I kind of want it to be warm again.
Yeah, already. Man, it's freezing. It's freezing. There's nothing wrong with it. I know what you're saying. You don't want to wish your life away, but man, it is cold. And for those of you living in the UK or perhaps other countries as well, it costs a lot of money to turn your heating on in the UK right now. It's obscene, like beyond obscene. It's actually quite scary. We're in our homes. It's raining and freezing outside, and we're all too scared to turn the heating on because otherwise we're literally just burning money.
That's right.
Definitely. I want some warmth. And like you, I've been, this is one of my favorite January jobs anyway, is like scouring the internet for holidays and things to look forward to in the year and getting stuff booked in. But I mean, even that's a bit flipping depressing because the prices of everything is just shot up like astronomically, like prices of airline flights, all of that have gone up significantly. So, hey, you know, tis what it is. First world problems, I guess, in some respect. But yeah, I'm done. I'm done with the winter as well.
I know. Had enough of it.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
So anyway, dude, I'm really interested after, because the last time we spoke, we were spoking post-Christmas, like post-New Year, and you were showing me your pedals and stuff. And I'm guessing since then, you've been experimenting with resetting up your pedal board and your tones and things like that. And you just had a gig and you said it went really well. So give us a run through. Tell us how that's gone. What's happened?
So rig-wise, pedal board-wise, I have this affinity and love, which will shock nobody of the listening audience, for buying more pedals, like every guitar player does, right?
Yeah, why not?
In the quest for eternal tone, improvements, marginal gains, all that kind of stuff. I think I might have just nailed it with this pedal board, though. I might need to just stop buying pedals.
Oh.
I'm really happy. I'm honestly, genuinely happy with all aspects of my pedal board now. So, very quickly, signal chain is Line 6, like wireless kit, G50 that goes into a Polytune Mini, which is brilliant, fantastic tuner. Love the kind of Polytune element of it. Mm-hmm. Then into a Crybaby Dunlop Wah, which I've had since I was 15. But literally ripped it apart and changed all the parts a few times, particularly the pot. But It's the original chassis. There you go.
There you go.
And then...
just like, hang on, just going to stop you there. Are you saying that your wah pedal is the musical equivalent to Trigger's broom?
It is.
Normally it fills in the horses.
Yeah, for those of you outside the UK or anyone above the... or under the age of 40, that hasn't watched Only Fools and Horses, yeah. There's this brilliant, amazing comedy program called Only Fools and Horses where this rather thick individual... thick as in, like, educationally subnormal, rather than the modern definition, which I think means bootylicious or something, isn't it? I'm going off on a tangent. Anyway, he said he had the same broom since he was 15 years old, and, you know, it served him well for 30-odd years, and he's only changed the handle 5 times and the brush head, like, 20 times. But other than that, this broom...
It's the same just, broom.
It's the same broom. It's not the same broom, is it? That's basically my wah pedal.
That's okay.
That's basically my wah pedal. So the signal chain goes into a range of different distortions and then into modulation effects and stuff like that. But I'm just really happy with everything in the signal chain. But you sent me before Christmas the link to the Boss DS1 reviews that were online, and that piqued my interest. And then we've talked about at length the TC Electronic Spark Mini Boost, which I'd never tried and really fancied it. So I had a whirl with those at soundcheck, and I think the Boss DS1 is a fantastic sounding pedal. It's a really good distortion pedal, but it is a distortion pedal. It's not a drive pedal, and actually the position I was looking to substitute it into needs an overdrive pedal, not a full-on distortion pedal. It actually, even on its lowest setting, it was too distorted for the level of gain stage that I wanted, if that makes sense. But it's a fantastic pedal. It's a great pedal. So that one didn't make it into the gig. And sitting in that position, which took me a while to get used to and get comfortable with, but it's that Weihuge STO overdrive. It's just once you get the settings right and you figure out how to use it with your guitar, because it is a very kind of... it's a very distinctive sound, but it's just an awesome pedal, and it's got really great touch dynamics to it, and it's such a really great tone for so many songs in our set list. So that is staying on the board. I'm not taking it off again. I'm just going to be happy with it. And that, those are my three gain stages, which I'm just so pleased with, which is the Love Pedal Super 6 Stevie Mod, which you can't get anywhere anymore. And it's just the best tube screamer beating pedal I've ever heard. It just sounds phenomenal. It's everything I wanted a tube screamer to be that the tube screamer wasn't for me. It's just that John Mayer, Stevie Ray Vaughan in a box sound. It just is. And then the Weihuge STO is just that kind of creamier, thick overdrive on the edge of like heavy distortion, but not so great for really digging in crunchy rhythm stroke drive tones. And then I've got my MXR Super Badass Distortion, which is just like my JCM 800 Guns N' Roses Marshall tone in a box. And that just covers me for everything. It's brilliant.
So are you like, to take me through your thought process during, are you stacking stuff as well during the gig, or have you got a pedal per sound kind of thing?
So the DS1 has come off. I'm not using that. I tried it. I tried it on there in place of the STO, but didn't ultimately get on with it. So my gain stage is basically clean Fender Blues Deluxe sound. I don't really use it, because what I have as my first thing is my Wish.com Clon clone.
Yeah.
which I love, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
And then that goes into the Love Pedal Super 6 Stevie Mod. And then we go into the STO Weihuge Overdrive, and then into the MXR Super Badass. And then for soloing and stuff, I hit the TCE Electronic Spark Mini Boost. But each of those gain stages, I don't really layer them.
No, you don't.
Because that would just be too much. It'd be too much. The only thing that comes on and off in addition to one of those individual gain stage pedals is the Klon.
Okay. So Klon is like your lead boost on top of whatever you have.
Yeah, it just if in a certain song I just feel like it needs a little bit more of a kind of push through the mix. It's not even to boost volume. It's just to it's a bit of EQ shaping. I use it more like an EQ shaping, really. It adds obviously a little bit of hair to my clean sound. So when I just want a clean sound, all of those drive and distortion pedals are off, but the Klon is on, and it just is basically a bit of clean, bit of EQ kind of thing going on, and it just creates a more fuller clean sound. Then depending on if I want kind of crunch, dirty, and then really dirty, those pedals are turned on individually. And then if I feel like it just needs a little bit of a push through the mix for certain numbers, the Klon just goes back on, and the Klon just works with each of those beautifully to just enhance their natural qualities without changing. It doesn't change their quality at all.
Yeah.
That pedal still sounds like that individual pedal on the settings that I've got it on. It just gives it a little bit of more presence. Mm. Just helps it push through. So that's wonderful.
And I think everyone loves using the Klon like that, right? But for me, I've always loved the Klon for as if it's an overdrive. I've always liked the gain high on a Klon. Interesting.
Yeah. And it does sound great.
Yeah.
There was a point when I first bought it where you told me how you like to use it. So I tried it like that and I was like, I love it like that as well. To the point, I don't know if you remember this, I said, maybe I need two of these. like one that is set like that and one that's set like that. That's just madness. So yeah, anyway, I'm loving it. But the point is I didn't get on. It's not to say I didn't get on with the Boss DS1. It's a fantastic pedal. And I need to build a second board now. I've got enough spare pedals lying around from having got to this point where I can build another one or two pedal boards for, I'm not sure what, but something.
Sorry to interrupt this conversation. However, if you're a regular listener, then you should definitely come and join us on our Facebook group, The Guitar Geek Hangout. You can interact with other listeners of the show, engage in general chit-chat about guitars, music and pedals, or just share images of your guitar collection for everyone to look at. Regardless, it's the next place you should visit online, so go now and join The Guitar Geek Hangout on Facebook. Do it now before you carry on with the podcast. I'll wait here. Hey, welcome back.
But basically, this board now, as I've got it, is that's it. Just I can't get any. I don't think I'll get any better than that. It's everything that I need.
Awesome. Well, you could build a spur board. It could just be like you could get yourself like a little 40 quid pedal train nano, you know, to get three or four pedals on, and quickly build yourself like a couple of gain stages. Stick another tuner on there, maybe, you know. And a delay or something, whatever it is, you know, just use a handful of what you've got and just take that to gigs too, just in case something catastrophic happens to your board as it is. And you kind of like, instead of spending a half a song trying to figure out what's wrong, you can just go, right, okay, just going to quickly chuck my spur pedal board down for the rest of this set and then, you know, troubleshoot. But, you know, that's just an excuse.
That's lavish, isn't it? That's lavish, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I've got to do something with these pedals because at the moment they're just sat on a shelf looking pretty, which is a crime. Or I've got to sell them and buy another guitar. There you go. That's something else to do. Just sell them.
That's something you could do. Do the old in-and-out rule. Yeah.
But I tell you what, mate, that TC Electronic Spark Mini Boost, yes. Oh, yes. You get it, right? Mm-hmm. I completely get it. Yeah. There is so much available volume on it. Like, I basically had it just cracked open. There's so much boost on it.
Yeah.
And you don't need much. But the tone of it is wonderful.
It is really nice, isn't it?
Oh, I loved my Moore Pure Boost. I still do. I still do. And something that the Moore Pure Boost has, which actually I think, that is really nice, and I did miss it a little bit on the TC Electronic, is it's got a bass and treble EQ as well as a overall level control to boost it for solos, but it's also got a gain function on the Pure Boost as well, which I had cracked open a little bit as well. So when I hit it for solos, it also just gave a little bit more hair to the solos, which really helped not to create a more distorted sound per se, but it just gave a little bit more compression and sustain on the solos.
It's almost more for how it makes you feel when you're playing, almost, isn't it?
Yeah.
It feels different under the hands once you get that little bit of extra compression.
Just to compress the signal a little bit more and made it sustain a little bit better, which was really nice. And as you say, can't tell it really in a tonal way, but you can feel it when you're holding a note or sustaining a note, which I'm missing on the TC Electronic Spark Mini Boost. But having said that, I think I'll just notch up the gain on the Klon a little bit further, and that'll compensate it. That the tone of the Spark Mini Boost and that momentary function is just, I'd never used it before until the gig. So I thought, am I going to get used to this? Am I going to be able to work it? Or is it going to feel like I'm tap dancing?
No,
it's just really intuitive. It's just such a simple piece of clever design.
Just lean on it or don't lean on it. You know, it's
that's it.
It's handy. It's almost like a volume pedal in a way that you just, you know, you just like toe down or heel down kind of thing.
That's
in a way,
it.
Isn't it?
That's it. And because of where I've positioned it on the board, which is deliberately done the wiring so that this Spark Mini Boost is right at the bottom layer of the board and right on the corner, it makes it, I've strategically positioned it so I'm not having to reach over other pedals. It's literally just there on the corner of the board. So I can just catch it really nice and easily without having to think about it. And great.
Well,
but so that's my board. I'm happy with it. It's not changing. My rig is staying the same forevermore. This is the rig to end all rigs. That's it. I'm done. Stick a fork in me. I'm done. I need not buy any more pedals or gear.
Nope.
This is the board for 2023 and beyond.
Well, I can't say the same thing.
You went to a gig and then sent me a text saying, I'm changing my rig.
Well, the gig was great, but I have been, whenever I've done a gig last year with the Helix, where I've been like on in-ears and it's been direct into the PA, I've been like, great, that's awesome. If I've had that Headrush FR speaker cabinet behind me, that's been okay as well, but it's just, you know, the one thing I don't like about it, it just doesn't feel like a guitar amp. It just, it doesn't have the kind of tonal shaping that a guitar speaker has, right? And I've just been missing that. And then this gig this weekend, I kind of, when I gig with those guys, you know, and it's a fairly stress-free thing, I don't tend to go through the PA. So I was like, I'll just crank the FR. And it really fluffed out on me in like the low end. Actually had some like odd distortion going on. And I thought,
just for our listeners, just tell us again what FRFR is, why it's such a buzzword these days in terms of monitoring.
Yeah, so if you're using like a modeling system like I am, like a Helix, where you are simulating every part of your rig in the modeler, including the amplifier and the speaker, then you don't put that sound through a normal guitar amp that then also imparts its own characters onto it. You would put it through something called an FRFR, which means full range flat response. So it's a full range speaker, so it's got a full range frequency response, which not all guitar cabinets do. And it's flat response, which means it doesn't have what like an engineer like myself would call a transfer function. It doesn't have something that it doesn't change the sound too much. Everything, if you put something into it, that's generally what you get out. It's got a flat response. And the reason for that is so that the tone you create inside the Helix or your Fractal or whatever it is you're using, that should be what you get out. So that's what I've been using, this Headrush 8-inch FRFR, which is, for the size of it and the cost of it, it is monstrous. But it just, I found it actually quite deeply dissatisfying this weekend, how it worked. And I thought, maybe I need to change my approach. And it was in looking at an alternative approach that I realized that I can make one change to my rig and the possibilities that it opens up is astounding, to the point where I've even done a PowerPoint presentation for you. Now,
I'm not disappointed. So you just, again, for our listeners, you sent me this text after, well, first of all, you sent me a single sentence text this week that basically said, I'm changing my rig. Yeah. Which you knew would be like lighting the touch paper for me. It was just like, knowing that you change your rig and have changed it significantly in the last 12 months. And I was like, I need to, what's happened? And I just texted you and said, is this because you've had a gig and something's happened? And you were like, yep. And so the fact that you've now done some homework to show me your idea excites me enormously, because this is either going to be complete genius or folly.
Yeah, exactly that.
But right. knowing you, it will be complete genius. I have no doubt.
And I'm showing a slideshow to Kieran, but our listeners can't see this. I've made a presentation for you, and I'm going to explain it as best as I can without taking up too much time. But what I'm showing Kieran here now is there's a diagram of what my existing rig is, okay? It's rig 1 and 2, okay? So I even go from my Helix into the Headrush FR-FR. For a lot of gigs, I'm going from my Helix into the PA, and then I'm getting back from the PA a monitor through in-ears. And that's usually rig 1 and 2, right? That's kind of what I did this weekend. The first set was just into the Headrush. It wasn't enough juice on the Headrush for the gig. So after the first set, we plugged into the PA and I monitored on the Headrush. So instead of the Headrush behind me, I had it in front of me like a normal monitor, right?
Yeah.
Great. But this is the change I'm going to make. Just this simple change. Okay, I'm going to get rid of the FR-FR, and I'm going to sell it, and with the money from that, I'm going to buy, providing it plays well enough, I'm going to try it out, I'm going to buy a Line 6 Catalyst 100-watt amplifier, because I can use it as an FR-FR. I can go it straight in to the power amp in, and that way I can continue to do my same thing, but what I'm getting is a more amp-like sound, because I'm going through... Yeah. You know, I'm going through a proper amplifier, and I'm going to get that kind of directionality you get from a guitar amp speaker behind me. It's not going to fluff out in the low end or anything like that. It's going to be a better feel, but I can still do the same thing. But that's not the only thing I can do. Okay.
This your Helix must be doing something with the Catalyst as well, right? Do they pair up in some way to create magic, or?
Just you wait. Okay. Just you wait. Here's rig number 3 possibility. I can just go straight into the amp if I want. And what I can do is I can get rid of all that DSP that's being used in my Helix to do the amp sound. I can use my Helix now as a huge digital pedal board. Yes. And I can just use the amp sound in the Catalyst. That's another option.
That's a great option.
Here's another option I can do. I can use the effects loop in the Catalyst to do the four cable method, right? So now I can actually put the Catalyst's preamp sounds into the Helix, right? Whoa. And then, yeah, exactly. So I can do the four cable method, because, you know, that's a good thing to do as well, which means it means I can put some of the Helix's effects post the amp sound, right? Yeah. So my time-based effects can come after the amp, even though the amp is a different box now. Mm-hmm. So that's rig number 4 I can do. Rig number 5, right? If I want, I can connect the MIDI connection to the Catalyst, and I can use the Helix to change parameters or presets on the Catalyst using MIDI. So it doesn't even be, it could actually be like a 12 channel amplifier as well as doing the four cable method. And that. So then that's crazy. And then, of course, the other thing I can do is I can just go straight into the amp if I want.
Yeah.
I can not even take the Helix. If I want to just, if I want it, I can just turn up. I can just set myself a nice lead sound, use the volume control to get clean.
On your phone, probably, as well, in this day and age.
Yeah, exactly.
No, because it does, right? Is it not controlled by a phone app?
You can have an app to control it by a phone, and then you can get to some deeper functionality in the effects and things like that.
Yeah.
And then also, if I want, I might build myself a new little pedal board just for these purposes. And then as we go, this is rig number 7. I can't do this. Jesus. I can only do 2 rigs at the moment. If I just change the amp, I can get up to this. So if I might do that, I might, if I change this Catalyst, then I might build myself a little, you know, just a fun pedal board just to rock up to a simple gig. Hey, Matt, do you fancy coming down to a jam night or whatever like that? Yeah, other people might be playing my guitar. I'll bring a simple little pedal board, just a couple of gain pedals or something. So there's another possibility.
Mate, I've got about 15 drive pedals for sale if you want one, because you sold all your stuff to buy the Helix. So you're going to need some pedals. I can help you out.
And then don't forget, just last year I bought myself a Digitech RP1 from the 90s.
Oh, I forgot.
Remember
you did that?
That is a serious multi-FX unit. I could use that as my pedal board as well. So that's
in case you encounter a DeLorean and need to go back in time.
Says, hey Matt, do you want to just join this you know Toto tribute band? You need to have loads of 80s effects. Then I can do that with the RP1. And do you know what as well that's good about the RP1? Yeah. That's got MIDI out as well, so I can use that to control not just the sounds I'm getting.
That's got MIDI out.
Yeah, I can use that to do program changes on the Catalyst, so I could actually use the RP1 to control the different channels on the Catalyst as well as different sounds, which also means the final rig opportunity I've got is I could not even use the RP1 for the sounds. I can just go straight into the Catalyst and I could use the RP1 just as a MIDI controller to control the amp.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's it. So from...
By one change.
Just one change. One change, mate. And that's
and
it.
And done.
Gone from
and
two done. Rigs to 10 rigs. Just,
and done.
Just by changing that Headrush FRFR to a Line 6 Catalyst 100, which after I sell the FRFR for what they go for with the Gator case that I bought for it, I'm probably looking at about £50 of my own money to get up to the Catalyst 100.
Oh, God, that's reasonable.
And that's
how much is the Catalyst then?
The Catalyst 100 retails for about £340.
That's a bargain. For 100 watt solid state?
Yeah, and the effects and the amp sounds in it are from the HX range of effects. Yeah. So you're getting Helix sounds. You're just not getting the depth of adjustability and functionality. They've reduced what you can do with the sounds down, but they are Helix sounds.
Yeah, but you've got a Helix for anything more complex that you want to model anyway.
Exactly that. So I'm kind of
what's
like,
the speaker in it? Is it a 1x10 or
it's a 12-inch? So it's a 12-inch Line 6 large neodymium driven speaker in it, and apparently it sounds really good.
Wow.
So I think that's what I'm going to do. I think I'm going to make that small investment in the Catalyst 100 after selling the Headrush and open the possibilities up as to what I can do at gigs. Hugely.
Yeah, I think it's sensible. I think it's really, really sensible, mate. I think that's going to work for you. It's way more sophisticated and advanced than what I was doing with my modeling stuff back in the day,
yeah.
But not entirely dissimilar, right? Because I was using the Pod XT to go into a, because I tried it through a PA and things like that, and through a PA monitor speaker and stuff like that, and I just didn't get on with the sound like you. It just didn't sound quite right to me. Something in the low end and stuff, which just wasn't right. So I used to run my Pod XT Line 6 modeling floorboard into the power amp section of a Marshall 100 watt solid state amp. So bypassed all the preamp and just went straight into the effects return. And that I found gave me the sound that I wanted, because it was everything coming from the pedal board that I'm modeling in the right way, but just the frequency response of that amp and having all that grunt of a 100 watt power amp, but in a guitar cab.
Yeah,
was great, and that I found worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
So I've no doubt that will be better than
for sure. I think
than the Headrush.
That's what I'm thinking. I mean, like I said last year, gigs where I'd done my part through the Helix straight into the PA and monitoring on in ears. It was just perfect, because previously that experience was really poor because of the miking up of my old system and sound engineers not spending enough time getting things sounding right, and then not having enough time myself to tweak my pedal board and stuff like that. That was why I moved to the Helix, because I could tweak at home on headphones and just be happy that I could turn up to a gig and then that perfect sound that I'd set up would be recreated. I don't have to worry too much about spending time tweaking, especially when it's all the gigs I had were weddings and you've got 5 minutes to sound check, you know, no time at all to play at any volume. But it's just kind of like, well, I got the FRFR for the sake of when I need to use it as an amp and not through a PA. That's why I bought that, you know, when I need high volume monitoring or I need to output at a high volume for front of house purposes. I guess after a year of using it now and having enough occasions to do that, you know, it just didn't cut the mustard. I want a more amp-like system that I can, like you did when you were using your modeling stuff. You know, you wanted a decent guitar amp style setup with a lot of grunt in the power amp and all that guitar amp and guitar speaker directionality that you get from, you know, you don't get from a PA speaker that's got a much wider dispersion and that's a much, you know, wider frequency response. So that's what's driven this. And it's only after I've kind of gone kind of, I think that's what I'm going to do. But what other possibilities is there that I've realized how many of these different rig possibilities there are, you know? I mean, and the other key thing as well is, you know, if my Helix on the floor decides to, you know, shit itself and it just all of a sudden in the gig, I've got no guitar sound, I can plug straight into the Catalyst. I could get through a gig by just going, then I can go straight into my amp, just like you might do if your pedal board breaks. And at the moment, I can't do that. You know, if my Helix goes down, I'm out of a guitar sound. That's it. So there's that element to it as well. But anyway, there we go. That's my rig change, dude.
I think it's genius. And as you said, if it's going to cost you £50 to have all those additional benefits sonically and flexibility wise, plus it's going to satisfy your need to tinker and play with different options for the rest of 2023, you're going to have so much fun experimenting with those different configurations.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's great.
I might even, you know, take the Helix and the Digitech IRP one out and have like this double width set of, you know, 24 different pedals to press, you know, like I'm John Mayer with his Bradshaw system or something like that.
Get two catalysts, one each side.
That's such a great idea. Go stereo. That's the only thing. The Catalyst isn't stereo. It doesn't have a stereo power amp pin.
No. You just get an extension cab and take two outputs out of the headrest of the Helix.
Anyway, dude, we need to move on to you know, the main subject of the day, because you've prepared something for us.
Well, I think this actually, as I've kind of started thinking about it and how to talk about it, I think this probably needs to be in at least two, if not three, parts.
Okay,
so maybe we'll do this over the next few episodes.
Okay.
Because having been inundated with setups for guitars in the last couple of weeks, and because previously we did the 8 basic maintenance steps, right, for your guitar that everyone should know, we kind of stopped there and didn't go into some more intermediate kind of steps that people could be doing to improve their guitar.
Yeah.
And the setups that I'm doing on people's guitars vary vastly. But by and large, for most people, it's all the 8 steps plus being able to really dial in the playing action on a guitar to make it feel and play just as good as it can possibly be. And we thought it would be great to be able to talk to our audience about getting their action right on their guitar and being comfortable on the guitar and having your guitar play as good as it can possibly play. So I would say once you've gone through our back catalogue and listened to the 8 steps episode, which was one of the first episodes we ever did, right? But once you've listened to that, and done all of those things to your guitar, then I think the next things that I'm going to talk to you about from a setup perspective will really help you take your guitar setup to that level where you just go, this feels great to play now. That's what I want people to have when they have a properly set up guitar. And I think it's not too difficult to do yourself. So that's what we're going to do. So, I mean, there's nothing more frustrating, as I said, than having your guitar not playing right. But I think there are three what I would call intermediate steps to dial in your action. So what I propose, Matt, is because I think it's going to be too much to talk about in this episode in itself, is I reckon we'll get started on step one today and people can go away and try that in of itself.
Yeah,
and it will already make a difference to their guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And then next episode we'll cover step two, and then the episode after that we'll cover step three. So over the next three episodes, by taking each of these little tips away to dial in your action, by the end of it, you will have a fantastic playing guitar and new set of skills that will enable you to hopefully dial in any guitar action, really. Mm. So that's the plan.
Imagine that.
Yeah, I'm gonna challenge you to take away these steps and give them a go. So
okay, brilliant.
The three steps that we're going to cover over the next 3 weeks to dial in your action. Number one, ensuring that you've got the correct neck relief. Don't worry if you don't know what that means at the moment, but effectively, that's step number one. And we'll talk about that today. Step number two is getting the action or height correct of the bridge.
Okay.
Step three is making sure you've got the action and height of the strings correct at the nut.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Now I'm making an assumption. Everyone knows what bridge and nut mean, right? So here's my question to you. Have you ever attempted to adjust those?
Yeah, I have. And it makes sense, right? Because obviously you're talking about the things that the strings pass over, right?
Yes.
And you know, the nut and the bridge, the strings travel in a straight line between the nut and the bridge. So if you're trying to adjust the action, it makes sense that you would want to adjust the height and positioning of those two items.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned the relief. So I'm going to try and, you know, advocate here for our listener and make a guess at the relief. So the relief is to do with the curvature of the neck. Right.
Exactly.
So if you're adding relief, you are creating more curve. Is that right?
Correct. Okay. Correct. Yeah, yeah.
And if you're creating more curve, if you think of it like a bow from a bow and arrow, then that's raising your action, I'm assuming. And if you're taking relief away and therefore straightening the neck
in
comparison
to
the string, then you're bringing the string closer to the frets. But there's a balance, right? Because every time you fret a string, you are bringing the rest of that string closer to the fretboard.
Correct.
And so yeah. Anyway, I'm getting ahead.
That was beautifully explained. That was beautifully explained. Right. So once you've got that neck relief right, and that is exactly as you've said, the amount of back bow or up bow on the neck relative to what the string tension and the string pull is doing. This really helps the action overall on the guitar, as you say, but more predominantly, I would say, in the middle part of the guitar, kind of those frets from 5 to kind of 12. But it really has a big impact there. The action at the bridge can be done in different ways, and we're going to talk about that in the next episode. And that is predominantly affecting the action from the 12th fret onwards, predominantly, not exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
And then the action at the nut, which is a bit more of an invasive thing, because you will have to take some files out and cut the nut to the right slot depth. That's more important at having a bearing on the action from, I would say, the first to the kind of eighth fret-ish. But all of these things are interlinked and do have an effect on the overall string height along the length of the neck to some extent. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to do these things in order, which is why we're going to start with step one, which is making sure that the neck relief is correct. Then once you've done that, then we look at the action at the bridge. And then thirdly, once we know the action at the bridge and the neck relief are correct, then I would advise checking and adjusting the action at the nut. And once you've gone through those three steps in order, then you should have your guitar dialed in. So today, mate, we are going to start with the truss rod and adjusting the neck relief. And effectively, that rod within the neck and adjusting the truss rod controls the amount of straightness, for want of a better term, of the neck relative to how the strings are pulling on it. But it's something people get a little bit scared about, because you hear kind of horror stories of, oh, don't touch the truss rod. if you do it wrong, you can kind of completely break the guitar and ruin it. Hmm. And, you know, I would say just be careful and follow these tips, and but don't be afraid of the truss rod, because once you've found out how to adjust it, it is something that is just so useful, because the guitar changes so much depending on kind of ambient temperatures and how much it's been played and gigged and taken in and out of cases and loaded into the back of the car and all of these things. And more often than not, it's the truss rod that needs a little tweak, plus or minus, just to dial it back in to where you like it.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't do that. And that's why I end up inundated with guitars coming through my door with people going, the action just isn't right on this. And it's just like, well, the neck relief is just way off for a start. And there's other things we can do. So do you adjust the truss rod and on your guitars?
I will do if I need to. I haven't needed to for quite some time, but I'm also, I'm quite accepting of the fact that my guitars aren't in the best kind of action. You know, they could all my guitars could have a better action. They could all be dialed in much better than they are. But I'm also kind of used to them in a particular way. Okay. I'm also one of those guitarists who I feel I play better if there's a little bit more of a fight in the guitar. Because that's, you know, you can try and get the best action you can for playability, but actually, you know, it's sometimes I feel I play better if the guitar is a little bit of a fight to play. But one thing I will say is, I think one of the reasons why some guitarists find it difficult to, or at least it can be intimidating to make adjustments to a truss rod is because, I think the truss rod only requires really subtle changes.
Yes.
We're talking like quarter turns and a half turn of a truss rod can be quite a drastic adjustment.
Absolutely.
But it can be almost, you can make a half turn adjustment to a truss rod and be like, nothing's changed. You might think, I don't know what's happening. And then you start thinking, do I need to do another half a turn? Is this nonsense? Or can I just twist away and it's all fine? I think some guitarists may not necessarily know that there are nuances involved in these adjustments.
Because they don't
immediately feel something changing or turning or bending and tightening, that they don't necessarily trust their own judgment then, therefore, that there's feedback from the guitar for the changes you're making. And actually what you have to do is you have to go looking for that feedback in other ways, right? You have to get tuned up again and make some actual measurements so that you can understand. But yeah, sorry, the long answer is no, I don't really touch my truss rods, you know, unless I really, really need to. So
that's most guitarists, like pro and amateur alike, like don't go near the truss rod. And I would say get over that fear and that hurdle, embrace it, get used to it, but do exactly as you say, which is go cautiously and figure out how to measure. Now, I've got to the stage where I'm sure there's our listening audience who are competent around setups, and, you know, even luthiers that listen you just have a feel for it. I can, you know, I don't necessarily need to get out the feeler gauge or the string gauge ruler to measure. I can and do on occasion just to replicate certain settings on guitars, but I can literally check relief with my hands and fingers and using certain techniques, which I will share. But I'll also, because this is for beginners trying to get comfortable with it, I'll also share how you do this in a more scientific way with measuring tools, very simple tools really that you'll need, so that when you make these small adjustments, if you're not completely au fait with knowing how to feel this stuff with your hands and fingers, you can measure it, and measuring devices will show you what you're doing with these adjustments. So you can see it as well as feel it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So in terms of tools, there's not that much you need really for this step of setting the relief right in the neck, which is basically, as we've said, adjusting the truss rod. There's three basic things that you'll need. One is a capo, comes in useful. You don't have to have it, but it comes in useful. The correct adjustment implement for your truss rod normally comes in with the guitar when you buy a guitar. It's normally an Allen key. Sometimes it's a screwdriver. Right. And sometimes like on the Gibson truss rods, it's like a little socket wrench. So just make sure you've got the right one. You'll be able to see by looking at the end of the truss rod.
Now, if you've got a Strat like mine, you might find...
Yeah.
I have to take the neck off to adjust my truss rod, unfortunately, because it's at the heel of the neck, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like a vintage Fender spec where it is a slotted, cross-slotted screw located in the heel of the neck. So you've got to take this, you've got to at least take all the tension off the strings. You don't necessarily need to take all the strings off. You need to take all the tension off the strings and you need to loosen those four or three sometimes screws bolting the neck onto the body and to then be able to crack the heel up sufficiently enough for you to be able to get your screwdriver in there. It's well worth the hassle though, so don't be put off if that's where your adjustment is. But I must say, from a guitar tech perspective, there's nothing that pleases me more when you see a guitar come through and it's got the headstock adjustment for the truss rod, or even more pleasing when you see something like what Music Man do, where they've got the adjuster on a little kind of slotted wheel. At the heel, it's like almost like a recessed out little cavity that's permanently exposed at the heel. So you don't even have to the hassle of removing a truss rod cover at the headstock.
No, that's it. You would use your hex key or your Allen key or whatever as a lever instead of it being like turning it.
That's super smart. Ibanez do some really cool things on some of their guitars as well, where at the truss rod cover, it's actually like on a little, like a little swivel clip where you just press it and swivel it and it opens up to access the truss rod rather than having to unscrew any screws. Anyway, these are sad little
modern instruments,
modern innovation. Anyway, so, get yourself a capo, get yourself the right adjustment implement depending on your guitar. As I said, 90% of the time, it's going to be an Allen key. So make sure you get the right size Allen key. And if you want to measure accurately and you're a fan of numbers, some people are, get yourself one of these action gauge rulers. Dunlop make them, Stumac make them. One of these things. That side. You seeing them?
Yeah, if you jump online and have a look and just put in like a guitar action gauge ruler, you'll get what Kieran's kind of showing me now, which is basically like it's like a metal rule, isn't it? But instead of it being like a normal rule, you can stand it up against your strings and it will tell you the height of your string from the frets in millimeters or in fractions of an inch, depending whatever scale you want to use. And that's vital, isn't it? Because like you said, if you want to know that your adjustment is, we're talking about fractions of an inch, aren't we? And we're talking about half and quarter millimeter adjustments here to your string.
Exactly.
Back. You're not necessarily going to be able to see and feel that by eye. So having this is vital in being able to know that the adjustments you're making are actually having an effect. So it's really good. And you don't have to spend a lot of money on that. I think mine I got from Amazon for a few quid. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. It's credit card size. It's a little steel implement. And running along one edge, this one is metric, so it's millimeters. Yeah. And apologies to anyone that works in inches, but I can't deal with inches. Saying something like 4/64 of an inch to me is it's just like what
57/69 of an inch.
just tell me what that is in metric, in numbers that make sense. So apologies, audience. I'm going to talk everything in millimeters because millimeters are like. But along one edge, there's effectively like an increasing kind of gradient of millimeter measurements, which are really easy to use because you literally just place that against the top of your frets and you can see where the string rests against the ruler and it tells you exactly what the distance is. Very cool. So one of those, or if you don't fancy using one of those, and get yourself a set of small feeler gauges, which
old
are
school.
just Oh, mate, I love these.
Old school engineering. Feeler gauge is
yeah.
So these are, this is kind of like a, you've got like a set of them, haven't you, on like on like a fan, you know, fan out almost. And they're basically like a finger sized, like plate, metal plate, and every one of them is a slightly different thickness. So you want to measure the gap between two things, you would slot different feeler gauges in until one of them was
exactly
maybe snug. And if it's quite snug, then you could say, well, that gap is the same size as that gauge, and that gauge might
that's
be
it.
0.2 of a millimeter or something like that. So you'd use those feeler gauges to measure gaps between two things that you can't get a measurement tool between, like a ruler or something like that. So it's good. It's good you're having this conversation with an engineer, because I can explain tools very well, you know.
not just an engineer, but the most eloquent engineer I've ever encountered in my life. Like, that was just beautiful explanation. I can't better that, or even could have done anything close to that. So thank you. That's exactly what the feeler gauges are. So I got this set again most of my tools I buy from Stumac, but some of those can be a bit pricey. But you don't have to buy everything off Stumac. As you said, Amazon has some very good stuff. Just read the reviews on it and make sure it's like decently manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
So I got this set of feeler gauges, and I've had it for ages. And it goes it goes all the way from 0.88 of a millimeter at its thickest. At its thickest,
that's 0.8. Its thickest is still less than a mil.
Yeah, wow. Its thickest is less than a mil. All the way down to 0.04 of a millimeter.
Wow.
So, I mean, this one is like tinfoil. It's so thin. It's so thin, but brilliant. And everything in between, there's about, I don't know, 100 in between. So you can get really, really into the whole measuring thing.
Yeah.
Right. Do you need any of these tools? No. I can accurately and happily set the neck relief and truss rod on your guitar using nothing more than my two hands and my eyes. And the way that you can do that is just by effectively pressing down on the first fret with your left hand, pressing down with your thumb on the, let's say, 15th fret with your right hand thumb, and then creating an arch with your arm and your index finger to press down around the 8th or 9th fret.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. So what I'm doing, I'm taking my guitar in my hands.
Yeah, in your playing hand.
I'm using
hands,
my fretting hand to fret the string. Let's say it's the 6th string. I'm going to fret it at the 1st fret.
Correct.
And then I'm going to use the thumb on my right hand to fret the same string at the 15th fret. So the reason I'm doing that is to create a straight line from those two frets across the fretboard.
Exactly.
And then with the right hand, so I've got my thumb on the 15th fret, but my first finger or my index finger, I'm gonna try and stretch that over while my thumb is still there to then tap on the string basically as far as I can. At what fret are you saying?
Somewhere around the middle,
eighth or ninth fret. So what I'm basically doing is using that finger to make sure that there should be. You should be able to hear like the string tap against the fret, shouldn't you?
You should. You'll be able to visibly. So all of this is done while you're seated in your normal playing position.
Got it.
Okay. So guitar not on a bench or stood up or anything like that. Sit down in a chair comfortably as if you were in your playing position, and then carry out that as Matt's done. And what you're looking to do with your index finger is check the level of bounce at that 8th or 9th fret and see how big that gap is.
Yeah.
Right. And that will tell you how much relief there is in the neck. Now, that is if you don't want to buy any tools or just want to do a quick check and see. But for completeness, and if we're doing this properly and a bit more scientifically, the way to do it is put a capo on the first fret. So then that frees up that left hand nicely. That bit's done. You've got your capo all on your first fret and it's doing all of your strings in one go. Then all you need is your index finger to press down on, well, you can press down on the last fret on your fingerboard.
Yeah.
And that's done exactly what you nicely described, Matt, which is create a straight edge between the two, effectively, ends of the guitar, between those two frets. And then what you can do is either use your string action gauge ruler and slide it in behind the string you're wanting to measure. Let's say it's the low E string. and you're wanting to measure what the distance is at the eighth fret, mm-hmm. from the top of the fret wire to the bottom of the string. Or my preferred way is to get a feeler gauge and slide the feeler gauge down between the top of the eighth fret wire and the bottom of the string, and see what that gap is.
Is there an empirical measurement you would expect to be for the right setup?
Yeah, so that's the key question, right? So this goes back to something that you said earlier, which is it's down to personal preference to some extent, right? Yeah. And playing style, right? Yeah. Somebody that strums the strings really hard and has an aggressive kind of right hand technique, mm-hmm. and you know, strong left hand, can arguably get away with a higher action and will need a higher action and more relief in the neck to allow for that string travel that is aggressive through their playing style. Otherwise, it's going to just buzz. Someone that's got a very light touch and a different playing style, say, for example, I don't know, a shredder who wants to play, you know, fast legato stuff, they're going to need less relief, and they're going to need those strings to be as close to the fingerboard as possible.
Right.
And they can get away with it because they're not going to be having buzzing because their playing style doesn't lend itself to that. And then you've got everything in between that, which is what feels comfortable in terms of what you like. Mm. And you described something really kind of, it's like this thing that you can't quite articulate, but you'll know when you feel it, which is the right amount of fight back from the guitar that makes you dig into notes and express yourself in a way that is kind of emotive on the guitar, rather than it just feeling either too easy to play or too difficult and a struggle. There's this sweet spot, which is just being able to dig into it in the right way, which you talked about earlier.
It's kind of resistance, isn't it? It's like being on an exercise bike and you not having any kind of resistance set on it. It's you want there to be something that responds to you, and not that, you know, a good setup makes a guitar too easy to play. It's not like all of a sudden everyone can play a guitar if it's just set up superbly. Yeah. But certainly for things like blues and rock playing, it does feel different when the guitar just has a little bit slightly more of a difficulty level to it in terms of playing. You know, you just got to try that little bit harder to fret things. And also, you know, it kind of feels different. If things kind of ring out slightly differently, I think, sometimes.
Yes.
When it's set up like that. But it's down to preference. And would you recommend then that if you don't know what those measurements should be, if you're a guitarist, you listen to this now and let's say, do you know what, my telly that I've got or whatever, my Strat, it's already set up how I like it. Well, maybe measure then what that setup is. Maybe go and do these things now to go, well, okay, this is already set up how I want it. But if I do these measurements that's Kieran telling me to do, then I can record what my other guitars should then feel like when I do these measurements to make sure they're
set. For sure. That's a great idea. And oftentimes if I get a guitar coming in and somebody says, say for example, the action is dialed into their preference, they'll say, I like the playing action on it. I like the way the action feels, but it needs a fret polish and a fret dress or whatever. I know I'm going to have to take the strings off, mess around with the frets. But before I do that, I'll measure the action and the relief and everything and make a note of it so I can put it back to what their preference was, not just what my preference would be. So, replicating it and taking measurements and keeping a note of those is really useful. But what I would say is that the relief will probably vary from guitar to guitar. Mm-hmm. And it does kind of vary based on the radius of the fingerboard as to what... and without getting into all of that complexities of that, it does vary. But to answer your original question, anywhere between, I would say, 0.2, I say anywhere between, this isn't a huge margin, anywhere around 0.2 to 0.3 millimeters relief is generally considered like manufacturer spec.
Right, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I would say use that as your starting point.
So that's what you're looking in terms of the feeler gauge measurement on that eighth fret.
Correct.
Once you've got the first fret and the last fret down or whatever. Now tell me, why don't we make relief measurements without doing that fretting? Why don't we just take a relief measurement with the string going from the nut to the bridge?
Well, I mean, There is a kind of sense that you could do that, but what you're looking to do is measure the amount of like change in the board as it's moving. So what you need is a straight edge to measure that against, so you can see how the neck is moving relative to your starting point. And pressing down on each end of the string gives you that straight edge to then measure against.
Got it. Right. So yeah, because I guess the problem is not necessarily the nut, but the bridge in that sense, isn't it? Because the bridge isn't part of the neck. So you could adjust the relief, and because the string's traveling past the neck and over the body of the guitar into the bridge, and the bridge might be a tremolo system, then actually that adjustment you make to the neck might mean that there's some kind of built-in relief that happens in the tremolo, and then you get a false measurement, really. So I
true.
Get, right, okay.
True.
So, okay, I understand now. That was one of the things I kind of thought, why, as long as you're just doing a consistent, you know, as long as you're measuring the same thing from one adjustment to another. But no, I get it now. It needs to be a straight edge that's purely isolated to the fingerboard itself, doesn't it?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Now, the measurements that I've said around 0.2 millimeters to 0.3 millimeters, that's kind of manufacturer spec. Please feel free to use use and abuse those as a starting point, because I personally like a low action on my guitar, right? Yeah. So before today's call, I just went and measured a couple of my guitars just to see. Well, because you can cheat these up and down from these values based on your personal preference, right? But so one of my Les Pauls that I'm gigging routinely, that's got a super low action on it.
Mm.
The relief that I've got at the 8th fret is 0.13 millimeters. All right. So that's way less than the 0.2 manufacturer spec, right? But it's beautiful, because I know the frets are all level, and the nuts cut well, and the bridge is adjusted properly, which we'll get onto in the next episode. So I can take that relief down, and I don't have a heavy, heavy playing style. I've got a light touch. So I'm not buzzing out these strings by having such a small amount of relief. And then one of my strats I just pulled off the wall, that's about 0.15, 0.16 on the relief. So it's not as low as my Les Paul, but it's a nice, comfortably low action. Mm-hmm. So you feel free to go lower if you want and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And then you'll always get feedback from the guitar by it buzzing or choking out. That'll tell you you've gone too far.
Higher relief on the Strat because of a more vintage radius, maybe on the than the Les Paul. I mean, what's the Les Paul? 12.
The Les Paul is a 12-inch radius, but that particular Strat I took the measurement off has a compound radius on it that goes from like 9 all the way up to 14.
Oh, okay.
So
right.
Got it. So purely the reason on that Strat is because I like to dig into it a little bit more and do that Stratty thing on it for blues.
Got it. Yeah.
So that's just a feel thing. I just like a slightly more, you know, dug in vibe on that Strat. But you make a good point. Some of it will be dictated to you by the physics of the guitar and the measurement of the guitar. So you can, but you can, it, provided you're making small little adjustments at a time, then see what it does. For those of you that don't know, basically as you put your Allen key or your socket wrench or whatever you're turning, if you turn clockwise, then you're tightening the truss rod and you're reducing that gap. Okay. Yeah. And if you're turning your wrench counterclockwise, you're loosening the truss rod and increasing the gap or the amount of relief.
So you're putting more bend in. So loosening it puts more relief in, so more bend in the neck. Okay. So you're allowing the strings to take over more, right? Is that what it is?
You got it.
You're allowing the neck to react more to the string.
You got
it. Tightening it is pulling against the string and straightening it.
Straightening it out. Exactly. Yeah. And if you've got no gap when you check the relief and there's no bounce, your neck is dead flat. Or undesirably going into back bow, which is not what you want, right? And you don't necessarily want no relief at all. You need a little bit, even if it's as low as some of the numbers I've quoted you on my guitars. So As you said, little tips for adjusting the neck. Don't adjust too much at once. Turn the truss rod about a quarter of a turn at a time until you know how your truss rod's reacting. If it's taking a little bit more, then yeah, increase the amount you're turning. But, you know, you're not sitting there kind of winding the Allen key round and round.
You're talking subtle movements, aren't we?
Subtle little quarter turn, stop. Tune it back up to pitch each time. Measure again.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what's happened to the gap. Something big's happened, something little's happened. Okay, I'm going to take it a little bit further. Tweak the truss rod again, little quarter turn. Tune it back up to pitch again. Measure again. Don't force anything. If you feel there's excessive resistance during an adjustment, it could be that your truss rod is already maxed out. That's as far as it's going to go in each way. And so you don't want to damage it. And that's where damage often happens, where people go, it's stuck or something. And it's maxed out. Don't overdo it. If you're in doubt, then take it to a tech. That's pretty much it. You did mention something really important as well, which I hadn't thought about, but it's a really good point. And it's why I always leave after I finish setting up a guitar. I always say to customers, and then I want you to pick it up the next day after it's been left overnight. And that is because some necks don't adjust immediately, or they'll adjust a little bit, but then they'll continue to adjust, you know, microns, little tiny increments, but after the guitar has settled for a while.
Right.
So sometimes if you've changed string gauge significantly, this is another time where you really want to tweak the truss rod. People don't. They just go, I'm going to change my guitar from 9s to 10s or 10s to 9s, whatever. And I go, well, you're going to need to adjust the truss rod. And they're like, oh, really? It won't make a difference. It will make a difference. It'll make a massive difference. But sometimes you need to leave the guitar for overnight. For that string change, or even the adjustments you've made, to have the full realization on the neck, and that's pretty much it, mate. That's adjusting a truss rod. That's it.
So in our journey then to absolute maximize the setup of our guitar, what are we going to look at next on the next episode? Are we bridge and nut maybe, or
yeah, definitely bridge next. And then nut. I mean, technically speaking, adjusting the truss rod, whilst it does have a good bearing on getting your action right, that's just the basic thing that needs to be done to make sure that your guitar's in the correct kind of place of operation. The next two steps are really where you're going to do the fine amounts of dialing in to then really get it optimally. So we've got now our guitar with the right level of relief in the neck, that we can then start to make these finer adjustments at the bridge. So we're going to learn how to adjust the saddle on an electric guitar. And we're also then going to learn the scary art of cutting a nut. But it's not that scary, actually, if you follow some simple tips like we've done with the truss rod. Honestly, you can do it. Anyone can do it. It's not difficult.
Just angle your cuts back, I'm assuming, is one of them,
Yeah. We'll go into that.
I can't wait already. And do you know what? This is absolutely vital for me, because I'm sure we've got plenty of listeners who are thinking the same thing. Maybe they've thought this already. Maybe they're just thinking it now. But I really want my guitars this year to play as well as they've ever played. And I really want to be able to do that myself. I really want to be able to pick up my guitars and play them and enjoy playing them. But also, if something needs to change, then I want to be able to change it myself. And I want to be able to make these adjustments with confidence and with knowledge behind them to be able to you know, feed into that confidence. And this is vital. So this is going to be a really important series of shows for us over the next few weeks, where, you know, you're going to guide me and everyone who's listening through some really important and simple processes. But more importantly, you're going to build confidence in our listeners to be able to go away and maybe order some tools and just kind of crack on and make their guitars even better. It's going to be
cool. That's the aim, mate. That's the aim. I mean, today we've covered one of the most simple, often most neglected areas on guitar setup, because no one wants to touch the truss rod. And actually, hopefully what you'll have learned is if you do it slowly and carefully and you measure what you're doing and you can see the impact of it, it's actually not a scary thing at all. And you can totally do it yourself. And it has a big difference. Next week, we're going to talk about adjusting the action at the bridge, which differs depending on what type of bridge you've got and what type of guitar you've got. But honestly, like, once you dial this in and do it properly, especially on a guitar where you've got like individual saddle pieces, like a Fender style guitar where there's six individual saddle pieces, and you need to not just set them to the right height, but set them to the radius of the guitar neck, all of a sudden your guitar just, it just clicks into place and you go, and you have that kind of like, oh, this feels great moment.
Yeah.
And so often I see guitars come to me where somebody's even taking it to a tech, or somebody set it up for them, and I go, and they go, oh, I like the action, it's quite a nice low action, and I look at it and go, yeah, the action, okay, if you like it, that's fine, but you do know that though that the radius hasn't been set on these saddles, they're basically just in a straight line, and you just go, this can play so much better, and then you give it back to them and they go, wow, this just feels great, and you go, yeah, because it's not just about the height of the saddle, it's about how you set the right radius.
It's a really good point, because you may be listening to this thinking, well, I love how my guitar plays already. Well, you never know, you might be playing a guitar that you would love twice as much if you just checked a few things. You might actually really enjoy playing guitar that's set up badly.
Maybe
you just got used to it that way because you've never had your guitar looked at, or that's just been your general experience the whole time you've been a guitarist. And you never know, your life might be transformed just by following a few simple setups.
I'm going to make a bold statement, which is, unless your guitar's been to a really good guitar tech recently, it will invariably have left the guitar shop with the wrong radius set on the saddle if it's a Fender style guitar. And you are about to learn something next week which you can do yourself, which is really easy, that will just make your guitar play infinitely better with a couple of small tools. So we'll get into that next week.
Awesome, can't wait for it. Well, mate, it's been such a pleasure catching up with you, because we haven't spoken for a few weeks, and this has been quite a big one, but excellent chat nonetheless, mate. And let's pick this up again next time we talk and carry on with this setup conversation. And
absolutely.
I can't wait.
Have a fantastic week, mate.
Yeah,
great
you too,
to chat to you.
All the best, mate. Take care of yourself. I'll speak to you next week.
Cheers, pal.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening once again. Have a great new year. If you like what you hear, then remember there are 70 other episodes going back almost 2 years that you can check out, where we talk about all kinds of stuff like best budget guitar amps, we have a pub quiz, desert island guitar rigs, and the 8 steps to setting up your guitar the right way. Anyway, best wishes, have a great week, and see you next time on the Guitar Smarts podcast.